The Parsha of Shavua, after the Shir, in Yiddish, he said usually 5 minutes or so, 10 minutes, he spoke on the Parsha. He commented in this week's Parsha on the Pasuk of Ki Yavo Elai Ha'om Lekho Shalokhi. Ki Yelahem Dalar Bo Elai B'Shofa Tatik Ben Yishu Ben Re'eu Voldati Yisuki Elokim Yestarosa. So the Ramban has a famous comment. Ramban says that we're talking about a manik Yisrael, a leader in Klal Yisrael. What's his function? He seems to be someone who's multi-ued, who's able to perform many, many functions. And the Ramban even speaks about a manig as someone who's going to daven. If you have chas v'shalom people who are not well in your family, that's part of kiyovo elai ha'om lidrosh elokim. Essentially, a manig is someone who has to be, shall we say, a multi-task, multi-purpose kind of individual. And then Rabbi Salvechi told the story. He said three gedolim were asked about the function of a rav. So one gadol said the function of a rav is to paskin shailus. The other gadol said the function of a rav is essentially to dashin and to somehow inspire people, motivate them to the extent that they can. And the third one, Rav Chaim Brisker, said the function of a rav is to be metapel b'yisayim of the almonos, to take care of those people who are, shall we say, having difficulty in their lives and the and the sword. So Harab Larry Rothwell actually does, who happens to be Kar Mishpacha of our own Harab Yudin Shlita, is probably an example of someone who fits all three positions. Namely, number one, he's someone clearly who is inspiring Baruch Hashem, the large community in Teaneck, New Jersey. Number two, he's someone who passed in Shilas in Halacha, but I would say primarily and preeminently he's someone who is really navigating the shoals of people's lives and helping them, counseling them, guiding them, directing them. All three functions of the Rav somehow conjoined in this rather remarkable young man who Baruch Hashem serves a very important role in Teaneck, New Jersey. Otherwise he'd be in Israel, unquestionably. But the fact of the matter is that he fulfills the pasuk according to the Ramban, Ki Yavo Elai Ha'om Lidrosh Elokim, Halavai, all of us, everyone here, just to use Rabbi Rothwax as a model of Aseh Lecha Rav, and you should connect yourself with Rabbanim, the Rabbanim in your community, obviously the Rabbanim in the Yeshiva. There are Rabbanim in the Yeshiva, you may not be aware of it, but once you connect with them, once you be mischabi with them, it's Ki Yavo Elai Ha'om Lidrosh Elokim, and Baruch Hashem, we have the exclusive of hearing of Rabbi Rothwax Shlita today.
Thank you very much, Rosh Hashiva. Thank you so much for that extraordinary introduction. It was incredibly inspiring. I don't know who you're speaking about, but really a great schus, an opportunity to have an opportunity to just learn with you for a few minutes. Rosh the very esteemed group of Rebbeim here who are giving up of their own precious time with their Talmidim, something that I don't take for granted. And all the more reason why I so appreciate and cherish this opportunity. We are now approaching the midway point of Sefer Shemos, and as we have experienced now Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, we now come to yet a greater height, an achievement which is probably, one could argue, the most significant, the most transformative moment in all of human history, the moment of Maimon Har Sinai, which we are going to read about this coming Shabbos. Everything that we've seen until now and everything that we read about later really pales in significance. And when you think about it, the moment of Maimon Har Sinai, the moment in which we were told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu explicitly what our role, our function in this world is really the foundation upon which our entire existence is built. We are here today, literally, and in terms of our mission, we are here because of the moment that we are going to read about this coming week's Parshas Yisro, the moment of Maimon Har Sinai. Without a doubt, that moment is the most spectacular, the most awesome, the most unparalleled moment in all of history. And it's for that reason why a fairly well-known Gemara in Shabbos, Peches, is quite surprising, because it seems as if Chazal, in their way of sort of capturing that moment, I don't want to say that they spoil it, but they seem to put a little bit of a spin on it, which makes us stop and wonder what really happened. I'm sure that you've all heard the Gemara, many of you probably have studied inside, where the Gemara tells us that at the moment of Maimon Har Sinai, Kofa Lema Sahar Kigigis, the Gemara which is darshaning, again, Pesukim in this week's parasha, tells us that when the people stood at the foot of the mountain, it's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu held the mountain over there. And I say as if because many of the Mefarshim explain that the Gemara is not necessarily to be understood literally, but it is a metaphor which is conveying a very important message. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu suspends the mountain over their head, whatever that means, and gives them an ultimatum. And so here's the way it's going to be. If you accept the Torah, if you accept my laws, if you accept my mission that I have, that I'm prescribing for you, so then great. Then we're all good. Then you can walk out of here alive, and we'll have no problems. It says the Gemara famously, v'imlav, but if not, sham tehek furaspe, which we normally translate as, well, you're going to be buried here. Sham tehek furaspe. But when you think about it, there's one particular word in that phrase, and really that sticks out from the entire Gemara, which really seems to be grammatically incorrect, or at least in context seems to be a little peculiar. And it is that word shum, right? Imagine, it's hard to imagine, but somebody suspending something very heavy and threatening over your head and says, if you accept this, good, and if not, so I am going to bury you. What would be the next word? Here. So really what it should say is, po tehek v'raskam. Not shum tehek v'raskam, you're going to be buried there. What does that mean, you're going to be buried there? So it really may sound in the scheme of things, particularly again, when appreciating this Gemara, it may seem to be almost a relatively insignificant point. But I think really, has potentially the ability to go ahead and to inspire us in a very, very extraordinary way, as I'd like to explain. So let me ask you a question, as I lost the place in the Medrash that I so carefully found before I came in here. What is the proper way to do a mitzvah? Sounds like almost a silly question. What's the proper way to do a mitzvah? So the proper way to do a mitzvah is the right way, right? To learn the dinim, to see exactly how the mitzvah is to be performed, and to do it the right way. So says the Medrash, I'm reading now from the Medrash Rab in Rus. Says the Medrash, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Miriam, Bo akasav lametcha shim yodam osa mitzvah, yasena b'leivo sholem. When a person does a mitzvah, they should do it b'leiv sholem. They should do it in a complete and a wholehearted way. A person shouldn't do a mitzvah half-heartedly. A person shouldn't do a mitzvah kacha kacha. A person should put his heart and soul into a mitzvah. And the Medrash gives us three examples, three individuals throughout history who perhaps could have done a better job. And this is one of those moments where I say, and I imagine many of your Rebbeim would say the same, that if the Medrash didn't say this, we couldn't say this. This is not the sort of critical analysis that we would have of great, great individuals that the Torah tells us of their actions, but Chazal, who are qualified, needless to say, so they say, okay, ilu haya Reuven yodea shakadosh baruch hu machtiv alav, vayishma Reuven vayaseh l'miyodam, had Reuven realized that the Torah would write about him, that he conspires, that he tries to figure out a way to save Yosef, b'kseifo haya malicha leitzalav. So he wouldn't have done, as the Torah tells us, that he would have tried quietly behind the scenes to arrange, to figure out how to get him out of the boar, but rather he would have gone, and he would have literally taken Yosef out of the pit, thrown him over the shoulders, and taken him back home to his father. Had Aaron, as we just read about a couple of weeks ago, Aaron known that the Torah would say that he is going to greet his brother b'simcha, in a state of happiness, he would have had an entire marching band escort him to greet Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar and to welcome him and to sing with him and to dance with him. In other words, Reuven did something that was very impressive, but it could have been so much better. It could have been Mamish Belev of Shalem, as the Medrash says. Aaron greeted his brother Moshe, but he could have done a better job. And finally says the Medrash, we can understand its context here in Rus, Ilo Yadeya Boaz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Machtav Lo Vayitzbat Lo Kali, Vatocha Vatizba Vatosar, so Agalos Mufutamos Hayim Achila, had Boaz known that the Pasuk would write about him, that he goes ahead and he prepares a meal, but it was a pretty shvach meal. It was, it was enough. But had the Torah, had he known that the Pasuk would write about him, that he prepared a meal for Rus, so he would have gone ahead and he would prepare the mamish like the most amazing, extravagant meal you could imagine. Something that would be really, really special. Something for the books, literally. So here the Medrash takes three individuals, Reuven, Aaron, and Boaz, who clearly in context seem to be doing a great job of what it is they're doing, and says the Medrash, you know what, it wasn't good enough. And you know what would have motivated them? Had they known that we would be talking about it now. Had they known that it would be written in the books for all of history. And this raises, of course, a very important question, one which is probably troubling some of you. And that is, what does Chazal mean to suggest here? Did they mean to imply that Reuven, that Aaron, that Boaz were only looking for kavod? After all, Chazal, of course, is sensitive to the fact that we are not supposed to be rodev kavod. We shouldn't seek honor. We shouldn't do things because of the fact that people will talk about it, that people notice it. We shouldn't do things because of the fame, the honor, and the glory that we're going to get. And here Chazal goes as far as to say that even people who did good things, well, it would have been better if they would have known. What is that? What is that to suggest about Reuven, about Aaron, and about Boaz? So there is a perish which I couldn't find in here, but I was able through there are some benefits of a smartphone just several minutes ago to pull it off. A perish on the Midrash called the Yafei Toa, and I'm going to read to you because I wrote it down because I don't want you to tell me I'm making this up later. So says the Yafei Toa, Chalila, God forbid that we should think that Chazal are telling us that Reuven and that Aaron and Boaz were looking for cover. Absolutely not. Rather, he says, Reuven, Asher had Reuven realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take the time, Kaviyachol, and the concern to write about this particular incident so that we, for future generations, would learn from it, Oz hisgaber od chayalim b'hatzalaso l'man yisgaber od adoros halomdim. He would have said, you know what? This is going to be a moment that's going to be studied for all of history. What we do today is not just going to matter right now, but people are going to be learning from this, from generations. And so therefore, we need to go ahead and to take all of our resources. We have to figure out how can we really make this moment count, because this is something that is going to inspire Doros and Doros. In other words, says the Yafei Toa, yes, what Reuven did was extraordinary, what Aaron did was great, what Boaz did was very commendable, but what they didn't really appreciate was that these moments would be emulated, that these would be studied, that we would be talking about it thousands of years later. And had they realized that, how much more would they have done it, as the Medrash says, B'lev Shalem? They would have done not just an okay job, they would have done not just an acceptable job, but they would have done an extraordinary job, a super exceptional job, because they want to make sure that this is something that could be understood for generations. You know, Chazal tell us, Ezeu Chacham. How do you know if a person is a Chacham? So actually, there are two versions of Chazal. Chazal answered that question in two different ways. The Torah Tmimah says, actually, they're really overlapping the same idea. One famous idea, Chazal tell us, Ezeu Chacham, Halomei Mikalad. That's what the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos. A person is able to learn from everybody. That person, that's a sign of Chacham. But elsewhere, Chazal tell us, Ezeu Chacham, Haroes Anolad. Somebody who can, what does that mean to be Rosh Hanolad? Somebody who can see the future? Only a Navi could see the future. Rosh Hanolad means a person who can see that which will come of his actions. A person who can see several steps ahead. You know, sometimes we're just so focused on the moment, we don't realize, you know, if I do this, then this is going to happen. If that happens, this happens. And there'll be an effect. And if I fail to do this, if I just decide not to do this now, so what will be the effects of that? To be Rosh Hanolad means to realize that what I do now will have an effect Lidoros. It's not something which just affects me right now. This is something that can matter for many, many years to come. Rabbi Yisrael Reisman told a story. It's one of my favorite stories. I don't tell a lot of stories, but the ones I tell I really, really like. He told the story about Shlomo Hyman, who was a Rebbe Torah Vadas, I believe, many years ago. So he had a very, very big shir. People used to come to a shir, I don't know, many, many dozens of Talmidim each and every day. There was a particular day where there was a snowstorm, and there were only two guys in the entire shir. It's a very, very, you know, small crowd. And you would think on such an occasion, the Rebbe would sit down and he would have the Talmidim sit next to him and maybe they would schmooze a little bit. But he said that Hyman got up in front of the shir that day and he gave shir with the same amount of energy and eslavas that he always does. And he was screaming to the entire room, even though there were only two people sitting there. It seemed a little strange. So after the shir, one of the Talmidim said to him, you know, Rebbe, you know, there's only two of us today. Why do you have to stand up and scream and project? And, you know, we heard you, we're right here. You're only talking to two people. You know what he said? He said, you think I was only talking to two people? I wasn't just talking to two people. I was talking to hundreds of people. I was talking to thousands of people. The two of you are going to have children, and your children will have children, and they're going to be Dori Doros that are going to be listening to me at this moment. This is not just I'm imparting Torah to two people. He was able to be Roes and Ola. He was able to see that this is something that is going to matter many, many, many years down the line. Could be, perhaps, when the Gemara tells us HaKadosh Baruch Hu issues this ultimatum at the moment of Mamun HaSinai and says, if you accept the Torah, the Kamun HaSatorah Mutav and Lav Shav Tehei Karaska, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not saying, if you don't accept the Torah, I'm going to kill you now. Even metaphorically, whatever the Gemara means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't saying, you're going to die right now. In fact, Adrava, you can walk out of here completely unscathed. And you, like the rest of the nations of the world, could walk away without the Torah. And perhaps for a couple days, weeks, months, maybe even a year or two, you'll be okay. You'll survive. Nothing will happen to you. But understand that if that's the choice you're going to make, Shom Tehei Karaska, you're going to essentially be buried in that decision. Because the decisions that we make today, the choices that we make today, affect us for many, many years in the future. Not just for now. And just like you could imagine, a person who's buried, who's unable to move, a person who's stuck, and sometimes, as the expression goes, you forgive me, a person digs their own grave. Sometimes we have no choice but to sort of suffer with the consequences of decisions that we made a long time ago. You're at a point in your life, you have opportunities right now today, where you make decisions which may not seem at the moment to be all that consequential. Of course, in the moment they're consequential. You have opportunities. My nephew Shlomo just told me about this great opportunity, the workout program. Right? Is that what it's called? The workout program. It's such an amazing, amazing incentive for learning Torah and to really push yourself and to see how many consecutive hours you can learn. A beautiful, beautiful idea. I'm sure that many of you are excited about the workout program. You should all be matzliach. But the workout program is something which is, for obvious reasons, something which is successful right now in the moment. It's something which is a benefit to me. It gives me the opportunity to stretch my legs a little bit and to see how much I can push myself and I'll feel good. Maybe I'll walk away with a kitzur shulchan aruch and mishnah berurah. Wonderful. Great. But that's not shom. That's po. That's right now. But can you imagine? Can you imagine if you could really push yourself to the limit and to see what you're capable of? So what comes next? Not that 6 becomes 7, and 7 becomes 8, and 8 becomes 9. I mean, at the end of the day, we're human beings. There's so much that we can learn consecutively before we need to just pick up our heads and breathe. But what does that mean in terms of my future? What does that mean in terms of what I could become? What I could do, the way that I can influence myself and influence others? Not just tomorrow, not just next week, not just next year, but l'dorei doros. And just as Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Klal Yisrael, if you accept the Torah upon yourself right now, it's going to be something which is going to pay off, not just for now, but the future generations. We should realize that sometimes we have to make short-term sacrifices. We have to make short-term sacrifices because we're really, really planning for a much bigger future. I'll just conclude, again, because I started with Rus. I'll conclude with Rus. There's a pasuk which I really think sort of brings this home and captures this idea in a very extraordinary way. At the end of the first parak, say for Rus, so we know that Rus is an extraordinary woman, and even though we don't automatically associate with Parshas Yisro, the truth of the matter is that there is a natural association, because in Shavuos we read Rus, because of the fact that she was a Gioras, and she was a woman who chose to accept Torah upon herself. So there are many thematic similarities, and it's an appropriate sugya to just think about a little bit, maybe this week, Menyana de Parsha. So at the end of the first parak of Rus, we know that Rus's mother-in-law, Nami, is trying to encourage Rus basically go back home. Once she realizes she has no future, she has no place in the Jewish community, so just go back home, go back to your family, go back to Moab, and you'll be a distinguished person there, and you'll be able to sort of cut your losses and move on and have a good future for yourself. So, again, you'll forgive me, I wrote it down because I don't want to quote Pesukim Balpeh. Batoma Rus, so Rus says to Naomi, Al tifki bi l'azveich v'shuv me'acharayim. She says, please, don't push me. Unlike her sister Orpah, who said, okay, fine, I'm just going to go home. Rus says, don't push me. I don't want to leave you. Wherever you go, I'm going to go. Wherever you sleep, I'm going to sleep. Your people, my people, your God is my God. She goes, when you die, I'm going to die. And I'm going to be buried there. As if to say, I understand in the short term, this is not easy. There are sacrifices. I have to give up a lot in order to be able to become part of this community. I'm an outsider. People don't want me here. I don't feel like I have a place. I'm not in my natural habitat. There's tremendous mysterious nefesh I'm going to need to invest in order to be able to make it here. But that's what I want. Not because in the short term it's really for me. I understand. I can go back home and I could be wealthy and famous, or I could be over here and I could struggle and I could literally have to beg for my next meal. But that's what I want. because she was inspired by Shom Tehei Kfar Aslan. The Shom Ekeler. I'm not thinking about it right now. I'm thinking about Ladori Doros. And as we all know, Lus Vizochet Ladori Doros. Meheri Ban HaMikdash, Mashiach. Mashiach, we daven for Mashiach every day. That's the Shom Ekeler. That is the reward that Rus ultimately has because of her Mesiras Nefesh. David HaMelech comes from Rus because of the fact that she understood what it means to be Roas and Olam. What I do today doesn't just matter today. It's something which is going to affect me for many, many generations. I can tell you, and with this I'm done, I can tell you, being in Eretz Yisrael, especially visiting some yeshivas and having the opportunity to remind myself what it was like, wasn't, 100 years ago, but, certainly can say a generation ago, to be in yeshiva, and to, go long walks at night, and to really engage in moments of cheshbon and nefesh, and to think about myself, my future, where I want to be, I can literally trace where I am right now back to decisions that I made during my time in Eretz Yisrael. It's incredible to me. And it's actually a little fright that at a time that I knew relatively little about life, I hadn't yet really, pursued any career, I hadn't gotten married at that point, I didn't know exactly where I was going to live and what I wanted to do with my life, but there were decisions that I made, small decisions, but very consequential, decisions that inspired other decisions, which inspired other ones. And then years later, you could look back. I'm not even saying it's necessarily a good thing. I'm not here saying I am what I am today because it's not always good. But consequences that I live with each and every day, good and bad, I could trace back the decisions that I made even before my time in Eretz Yisrael. But this is a tremendous, tremendous opportunity. It's an opportunity that you all seem to be taking good advantage of. I had the opportunity to just spy on some of you this morning. I wasn't looking at anybody in particular, but just to see the culture and the base medrash, and to see the ruach that exists in the yeshiva is something which is really extraordinary. And you should be zochah to take advantage of every single moment you have and realize, as Reuven and Aaron and Boaz didn't necessarily appreciate, that I can't promise you that the Torah is going to write about you. I can't promise that there's going to be a book which is going to say, here's what Chaim Yankov did on this and this day, and this. But the message is exactly the same. That what we do today is going to be written, it's going to be inscribed, it's going to matter, not just for us, but with Dori Doros. We should be Zoche to continue to be inspired by the tremendous Rebbeim you have over here, the incredible Rosh Hashiva, and have a years of tremendous growth. And Bezrus Hashem, we should all be Zoche to learn together here in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, together with the coming of Mashiach, b'mehira v'yameinu. Thank you again. Thank you.